All right, welcome everybody to another deep dive. Today we're going to be talking about the case of Bank of New York Mellon v. Patricia DeMayo. This case basically looks at what happens when you have a house that's been foreclosed on, but the people are still living there.
Okay.
And what are the kind of laws that govern that situation?
Yeah.
We have two sources here.
Okay.
We have an analysis from Perplexity AI, and we also have a standard brief.
Gotcha.
And one of the big questions right off the bat is, according to our sources, it's not clear whether Patricia DeMayo was actually the owner of the home that was foreclosed on or whether she was a tenant.
Oh, wow.
So that's going to be a really key distinction because there are federal laws that protect tenants when a home is foreclosed on.
Right.
So our goal today is to sort of wade through those laws and maybe take a look at some of the procedural issues that can arise in this kind of situation.
Absolutely. I mean, it's a huge question, right? Because as you mentioned, you have that federal law, the Protecting Tenants at Foreclosure Act, so PTFA, and that really kind of throws a wrench in, right? Because you have these like state procedures, you know, like a 5-day notice in Arizona.
Right.
That might be totally fine if it's just a straight eviction, but then you bring in this federal overlay that's specifically meant to protect tenants after a foreclosure.
Right.
So yeah, definitely going to be interesting. Sort through.
Yeah. So the Perplexity analysis suggests that she was the owner of the property.
Yeah.
But the standard brief says that she was actually renting from someone named JS.
Oh, interesting. So two like totally different fact patterns.
Yeah. So two totally different fact patterns. And that's going to be super important when we look at how whether the PTFA even applies in this case.
Absolutely. Because, I mean, think about it. If she's the owner, and she loses her house to foreclosure, right? Then, you know, from a policy standpoint, it's almost like, well, you didn't pay your mortgage, so why should you get all this extra time and protection?
Right.
Versus if she was a tenant who was paying her rent, like, you know, faithfully, and then all of a sudden the owner stops paying the mortgage,
right,
and she gets caught in the crossfire.
Right.
That's a totally different situation, right?
Right.
Where you would want to have that protection, probably.
Right.
You'd want to make sure that somebody who's doing the right thing, so to speak, isn't getting kicked out, you know, within 5 days.
Right.
Which is what Arizona law would normally allow.
Right. Now, another really interesting fact about this case is that Patricia DeMayo had already moved out of the property by the time the appeal went up to the Arizona Court of Appeals.
Oh, interesting. So, like, why are they even hearing the case?
Right. So this gets into something called the mootness doctrine.
Oh.
Have you ever heard of this?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So, basically, the idea with mootness is that if a case doesn't really have a live controversy anymore.
Right.
Like, if the issue has already been resolved.
Right.
The court's not going to waste its time hearing it, right?
Right.
Because their decision's not going to change anything.
Right. It's not going to make any difference to the parties.
Exactly. Exactly.
So, in this case, she'd already moved out, so what's the point of even having this case anymore?
Yeah, that's a good point. But I'm guessing there's more to the story, right?
There is. So there are a couple of important exceptions to the mootness doctrine.
Okay.
One of those exceptions is if there are collateral consequences.
Okay.
So in this case, if Patricia DeMayo has an eviction judgment against her,
yeah,
that could affect her ability to rent in the future.
Right. Makes sense. Landlords are going to be hesitant to rent to someone who's been evicted before.
Right, exactly.
That could stick with her for a while.
Right. So even though she's no longer living in the property, that judgment itself could have like these lasting negative effects.
Exactly. So it's not really moot in the true sense of the word. Right.
Right.
Like it still has real world consequences for her.
Exactly. Okay. So let's get into the PTFA now. What does this law actually do?
All right. So the PTFA, it's basically like this safety net for renters, right?
Sure.
It was passed, I think, in 2009.
Okay.
And the main thing it does is it requires a 90-day notice to vacate for tenants if their landlord's property gets foreclosed on.
Okay.
So it's a much longer time period than like that 5-day notice we talked about earlier.
Right.
And it's specifically meant to give tenants more time to find a new place, you know, get their affairs in order.
So the key term here in the PTFA is bona fide tenant.
Right.
So how do our sources define that?
Yeah, so that's where things get a little tricky, right?
Right.
Because the PTFA itself doesn't really lay out like a super specific definition. But from what I'm gathering from both Perplexity and the standard brief, it seems like to be considered a bona fide tenant,
Yeah.
You got to have a lease agreement in place.
Okay.
You got to be paying rent, obviously.
Right.
And then the key thing is that your tenancy has to have started before the foreclosure process began.
Okay, so so it's really about protecting those pre-existing tenants, not necessarily somebody who is an owner who is maybe staying in the home after they've, you know, after the bank has taken it over.
Exactly, exactly. Because you can imagine a situation, right, where somebody's like, oh, I'm just going to stop paying my mortgage.
Right.
And then I'll just claim I'm a tenant and get the 90 days.
Right.
That's not what the PTFA is for.
Right.
It's really meant to protect people who are, you know, caught off guard.
Right. Okay, so let's go back to our two scenarios regarding Patricia DeMeo.
Okay.
So in scenario one, according to the perplexity analysis, she was the former owner of the home. Mm-hmm. How does that affect the application of the PTFA?
Yeah, so in that case, according to perplexity, the PTFA wouldn't really apply at all.
Okay.
Because she wasn't a tenant, right? She was the owner.
Right.
So the 90-day notice wouldn't be required.
Right.
And the bank would just have to follow, you know, the regular state eviction procedures.
Okay. So in Arizona, that 5-day notice would be enough.
Exactly. Yeah. As long as they followed all the other state rules, of course.
Right. Okay. Now let's look at scenario two, where the standard brief claims that she was actually a tenant.
Gotcha.
How does the PTFA, how does that change the way that the PTFA applies?
So in that scenario, the PTFA becomes really, really important.
Okay.
And actually, the court in this case found that the bank didn't follow the PTFA correctly.
Okay.
They gave her the 5-day notice, but they didn't wait the full 90 days before making it effective.
Okay.
So the court basically said, nope, that doesn't cut it.
Good.
You got to give her the full 90 days.
And the standard brief also quotes Senator Dodd.
Yeah.
Who is one of the sponsors of the bill, saying that it's really about protecting those tenants
right.
who were renting before the foreclosure happened.
Exactly. I mean, that really emphasizes the intent behind the law, right?
Yeah.
It's not about giving a free pass to former owners.
Right.
It's about protecting those who are renting and kind of got stuck in a bad situation.
Okay. So in addition to the collateral consequences exception to the mootness doctrine.
Yeah.
There's another exception that comes up in this case.
Okay.
That's called capable of repetition yet evading review.
Oh, yeah. That's a mouthful.
Yeah. So what does that one mean?
All right. So that one's basically for situations where you have an issue that's likely to come up again and again.
Okay.
But because of the nature of the issue itself, it might always become moot before a court can actually, like, fully rule on it.
Okay.
So imagine like an election dispute where the election's already over by the time the case gets to court.
Right.
Like the court can't really go back in time and change the results.
Right.
So that would normally be moot.
Right.
But if it's an issue that's likely to come up in future elections,
right.
the court might still want to weigh in and provide some guidance.
Right.
So that's kind of the idea behind capable of repetition yet evading review.
So in this case, the court said that even though Patricia DeMeo had moved out,
right.
this question of like how much notice is required for a bona fide tenant is going to keep coming up over and over again.
Exactly. Because foreclosures, unfortunately, happen, right?
Right.
And there are always going to be tenants caught in the middle.
Right.
So the court wanted to make sure the law was clear on that point.
So even if her case was moved, it was still an important issue for the court to sort of.
Definitely. They wanted to set a precedent, right?
Right.
So that future cases would have some clear guidance.
Okay. So let's recap the key legal principles that we've talked about. So we've got the mootness doctrine.
Yeah.
We've got the collateral consequences exception to the mootness doctrine.
Right.
We've got the capable of repetition yet evading review exception.
That's a long one.
That's a mouthful.
Yeah.
And we've got the Protecting Tenants at Foreclosure Act.
The PTFA. Yeah.
So what are some of the key takeaways from this case for, you know, for our listeners who might be law students?
Yeah, great question. So I think the first big takeaway is just how important it is to figure out exactly who you're dealing with. Like in this case, is it the former owner or is it a tenant?
Right.
Because that totally changes the legal analysis.
Right.
The second thing is procedural compliance.
Okay.
Like you got to dot your I's and cross your T's.
Right.
Especially when it comes to legal notices and deadlines.
Right.
A small mistake can totally screw up your case.
And a 5-day notice is different from a 90-day notice.
Oh, yeah. Huge difference.
Hugely different. And then finally, I think this case is a good example of how state and federal law can sometimes clash.
Absolutely.
And you have to be aware of both.
Right. You can't just look at one in isolation.
Right. So you have to look at what the state law says. You have to look at what the federal law says.
Yep.
And then you have to figure out how they work together.
Exactly. And sometimes, you know, federal law will preempt state law.
Right.
Like in this case with the PTFA.
Right. So to sum it all up, the Bank of New York Mellon v. Patricia DeMayo case really shows us just how important the facts are.
Totally.
And it also highlights the importance of the mootness doctrine and its exceptions.
Yeah.
And then finally, you know, this key piece of federal legislation, the Protecting Tenants at Foreclosure Act.
Absolutely. It's a case that really packs a punch in terms of legal concepts.
Yeah. So listeners, I want to leave you with a final thought.
Okay.
Think about how the growing popularity of different living arrangements like short-term rentals or situations where former homeowners are renting back their properties after a foreclosure might make these tenant protection laws even more complicated to apply.
Definitely. That's a great point.
Does this mean that the laws might need to be updated?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question.
What do you think?
Like, how do we balance protecting tenants with, you know, also making sure the system is fair for everyone?
Right. And how do you account for all of these, like, different living situations that didn't exist, you know, even 10, 15 years ago?
Yeah, things are changing so rapidly.
Right. So a lot to think about there.
Yeah, definitely a lot to ponder.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. We'll see you next time.
Sounds good.